Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Vava Med Aleph. The Gemara begins, Chutz Min Adam. It's quoting from the Mishnah, which yesterday told us that even though there are certain items that are not Chayavim B'Pigul, which was the Mishnah that we saw back on Daf Mem Gimel, nevertheless, those items still are Chayavim B'Shum Notar or B'Shum Tumah. The one exception to that is Chutz Min Adam. So that's what the Mishnah said, and the Gemara wants to discuss that today, Chutz Min Adam, Menahane Mile. How do we know that there is no application of Pigul Notar Tamei by Dam? Now we're actually going to go over to something that's not connected at all, which eventually will bring us back to this topic over here, which is the issue of Mi'ilah. Is there Mi'ilah with regards to the Dam? Mi'ilah is the misappropriation of Hekdesh, which if one is engaged in that, they will have to bring a Korban Hasham Mi'ilot and then pay Karen V'Chomesh. So over here, the Gemara is discussing whether there is a din of Mi'ilah with regards to Dam. So the Gemara begins, Amar Ula Amar Kra. The pasuk says, "Ve'ani nitativ lachem shelachem yehei." So they're quoting the pasuk from Parshat Achrimot, Parak Yud Zayin, pasuk Yud Aleph, "Ki nefesh habasar badam hi, ve'ani nitativ lachem ala mizbeach lechaper al nafshoteichem ki adam hu banefesh yechaper." So Ula brings the source for it from "Ani nitativ lachem," that I have given to you, shelachem yehei. That it's yours. Yours meaning in the sense that you can do with it as you please. It does not belong to Hekdesh. Debei Rabbi Shmuel Tano Amar Kra, in that same pasuk it says, Lechaper al nafshoteichem, Chapara nitativ. I gave the blood to be used for kapara, velo lemi'ilah, but it's not subject to mi'ilah. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Kra, who? The pasuk that Rashi quotes is actually from the same Perek Yud Zayin, but pasuk Yud Dalet, ki nefesh kol basar damo b'nafsho hu, v'omar l'bnei Yisrael, dam kol basar lo tochelu, ki nefesh kol basar damo hi, kol achlav yikarei. That's what Rashi quotes over here, but you can see in the Masoret HaShas, and it makes a lot more sense to quote the hu from the pasuk that we were reading before, which is ki nefesh habasar badam hi, ani netativ lachem, which we already darshan by Ula, ala mizbeach lechaper al nafsho techem, which was the drush of the Bein Rabbi Shmuel, Ki adam hu banefesh yechaper, and this would be the drusha of Rabbi Yochanan, hu lifnei kapara kelachar kapara, that the din of the dam will be the same way it is before kapara as it is post kapara. Ma achar kapara ein bo mi'ila, just like after one has attained kapara, atonement, through the zvikat adam, there is no longer any mi'ila with regards to the dam. Af lifnei kapara ein bo mi'ila. So too, before kapara, there is no din of mi'ila. The Gemara says, Ema, why don't you use the opposite? Why don't you say just the opposite? La'achar kapara k'lifnei kapara. That after kapara will be just like before kapara. Ma'lifnei kapara yesh bo mi'ila. Just like there is mi'ila before kapara. Af la'achar kapara yesh bo mi'ila. So too, after kapara, there will be mi'ila. The Gemara says you can't formulate it that way because enecha davar shenaseit mitzvato umo'alim bo. Because there's nothing about which you have done or completed the mitzvah where there's still a din of mi'ilah. Mi'ilah is a misappropriation of Hekdesh, but it still has to be deemed to be Kodshe Hashem in order for there to be mi'ilah. Once the mitzvah is done, it's no longer deemed to be Kodshe Hashem. You've accomplished what you wanted with this item vis-a-vis Kodesh, and therefore it's no longer subject to a din of mi'ilah. So based on that, we know that achar kapara, there's no way that there is mi'ilah associated with this dam. So therefore, you can't make a claim that the Hekesh of Hu says Bahaviyato Yehei, that it remains steadfast in its status. So that means that whatever it is before Kapara should be after Kapara, because after Kapara, there's no way that you can suggest that the item should have Mi'ilah. Therefore, the only way to learn it is to say that Achar Kapara, where there is no Mi'ilah, so to before Kapara, there is no Mi'ilah. Now, the Balei HaTosfot ask, why don't we say the same paradigm? There's no mitzvah where before the mitzvah is done that you don't have a din of mi'ilah. Just like when you say after the mitzvah is completed, there is no mi'ilah. So to before the mitzvah is completed, there is mi'ilah. So why can't you set up that standard and say that you can't learn the other way as well? So the Balei HaTosfot actually bring a couple of examples that show that even if they mitzvato, there are certain items that don't have mi'ilah. They do have mi'ilah maybe immediately before you perform the mitzvah or at the moment you're performing the mitzvah. But earlier than that, there is no din of mi'ilah, so that is not a paradigm necessarily, and therefore you can say that just like achar kapara, there is no mi'ilah, because that is a standard everywhere. So too, before mi'ilah, there is no din of, so too, before kapara, there is no din of mi'ilah. So that's the limud of Rabbi Yochanan. The Balei Tosafot bring from the Rabbeinu Tam, who says that the Gemara tells us in Me'ilah that a mekiz dam behema lets the blood of an animal of kodushim mo'alim bo. There is Me'ilah. Wait a minute. We just said here that there is no Me'ilah by the dam. How could it be that the Gemara Me'ilah says that there is Me'ilah by the dam? So the Rabbeinu Tam answers that there are actually different stages here. And we'll see from another question in the Balei Tosafot, there are actually four stages that are involved here. Rabbeinu Tam suggests that there's a difference between the time prior to Shechita and the time post-Shechita. Prior to Shechita, the dam is considered to be one with the goof of the animal. And just like there is Mi'ilah in the goof of the animal, so too is there Mi'ilah in the dam of the animal. The dam at that point is inseparable from the animal in its entirety. And just like there's Mi'ilah by the animal, there will be Mi'ilah by the dam. Then once you hit Shechita, then they separate into their component parts, and then dam will be subject to what we said over here, that just like achar kapara, there is no Mi'ilah, so till the fnei kapara, there is no Mi'ilah. And then after kapara, there's also no Mi'ilah. Then the Balei Tosafot asks from the Gemara in Yoma, which tells us that the blood that used to flow out of the Mikdash into the Kidron Valley, that they used to sell that to the farmers to use as fertilizer in their fields. So the Gemara there says that you have to pay for it, because otherwise it's a problem of Mi'ilah b'kodoshim. So now we see that again there is Mi'ilah b'dam. And here's a situation in which it's Mi'ilah b'dam, after it wasn't Mi'ilah b'dam. Balei Tosafot suggests that that's only an institution mid'rabbanan. He does bring from the Rabbeinu Chaim, who suggests that it's a din d'oraita, that Beit Din is actually maktish, the dam that is flowing out of the Mikdash. In other words, it's a din d'oraita, but the Balei Tosafot in the end dismissed that claim based on other Gemarot that seem to bring it as a proof, indicating that it is a din d'rabbanan and not a din d'oraita. And that's how they solve the problem here, by saying there are actually four stages with regards to the dam. There's the dam prior to Shechita, where it does have a din of Mi'ilah, Mi'ilah d'oraita. There's the dam post the Shechita, before Kapara, where it does not have Mi'ilah. That's the limud that we have from Rabbi Yochanan, who, b'habiyato tehei, just like l'achar Kapara, so too lifnei Kapara. Obviously, post Kapara, there is no Mi'ilah. That's because anything shenaseik mitzvato, after zrikata dam, there is no Mi'ilah with it. But then, when it's flowing out of the Mikdash, or out of the Mizbeach, into Nachal Kidron, over there, the Rabbanan instituted there will be Mi'ilah with that dam, in order that the farmers don't demean the Kodoshim, or some way think that one can get benefit from Kodoshim. So they instituted a Mi'ilah d'Rabbanan, so that they would force the farmers to pay for it, so that if it was being redeemed, then there would be no din of Mi'ilah, as well as it was probably a good fundraiser for the Mikdash, that if they sold that blood that was flowing out of the sewer system for fertilizer to the farmers, that they'd actually make some money from it as well. So then the Gemara says, Vilo, is that really true? That any time the mitzvah is completed with regards to any item, there's no longer any mi'ilah? Varei trumat adeshin. When it comes to the removing of the ashes on top of the mizbeach, you have to take a scoop full of the inner coals or ashes every day, take them off the mizbeach, and then place them down on the ground next to the kevesh, next to the ramp up to the mizbeach. The trumat adeshin is something whereby, even after you've done the mitzvah of removing the ashes from the mizbeach, there's still a din of mi'ilah with regards to this. How we know that Rashi claims over here is because there it says, v'samo etzel ha-mizbeach, that you have to place it down next to the mizbeach. And Rashi says that the Gemara learns from that, sham gnizatan, over there it has to be placed in the gniza, sham nivla bimkoman, over there it gets absorbed into the ground, ama asur b'ana, the fact that it requires gniza, the fact that it must be placed over there, shows you that there is still inherent kedusha or mi'ilah that is associated with this item, even though naseit mitzvato, even though you completed the mitzvah of doing the trumat adesh and taking it off and placing it down next to the mizbeach, there's still a persisting issue of geniza, and for that reason, there's still a din of mi'ilah. That means even post-mitzvah being naseit, there still is a din of mi'ilah. Or you could simply just formulate it, the fact that there's a necessity to place it in a particular location indicates to you that there is something problematic with this item, even after the mitzvah has been done, and that shows you that there's still a din of mi'ilah. So you see here, we do have an example of an item, which is naseit mitzvato, and yet there's still a din of mi'ilah. If that's the case, why can't that be paradigmatic in nature, and tell us that even in cases where the mitzvah has been done, there still is a din of mi'ilah? That's because Trumat HaDeshen and Big Day Kuna are two psukim teaching you the same din. We've mentioned this numerous times, that the Torah is based on this concept that if the Torah teaches you something, then you can apply that broadly to any other case. Whatever it teaches you becomes paradigmatic in nature, and then you can apply it or extrapolate it to other cases. That's only if the Torah teaches you that din once. If the Torah teaches you that same din twice in two different areas, then it's no longer paradigmatic in nature, but rather those are the exceptions to the rule. It's not becoming a paradigm, but rather it's telling you that this is an exception and this is an exception. Otherwise, you only have to write it once, not twice. So what the Gemara points out over here is that we have the same concept in two places. We have it by Trumat HaDeshen. We also have it by the Big Day Kuhuna of the Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippurim. Choshnei Ketuvim, Abayim Kechad, Eim Melamdim. And when it comes to two psukim that are teaching you the same din, they become the exception to the rule rather than the rule. And therefore, you can't extrapolate from them. They're uniquely associated with these two mitzvot. Where it says, Anichu the Rabbanan Damre, Anichum Sham Melameh Shetunim Gniza, because they believe Anichum Sham means that they require Gniza. So that works well according to the Rabbanan. It's Machloket Rabbanan and Rabbi Dotson, the Gemara in Yoma, where it says there, Anichum Sham, with regards to the big day, Kohen Gadol, and Yom Kippurim, the four white vestments that he wears to do the Avodah to Yom Kippurim, it says about them that Anichum Sham, after he finishes them, he must leave them there. Anichum Sham, the Machloket is, what does that mean? According to the Rabbanan, Anichum Sham means they're put into Gniza. They can never be used again. Which means, again, here, there's this concept of Kiddusha or Mi'ilah that persists even after the mitzvah has been done. The mitzvah is to use them on Yom HaKippurim, and despite the fact that they've already been used and the mitzvah is completed with them, there nevertheless is still an issue of Gniza associated with them, and that is because it must be that there's still an Isur Hana'ah as well as a problem of Mi'ilah if someone benefits from these items. That's true of the Chachamim who require Gniza. El Rabbi Dosa, who says that Menichim Sham is not teaching that there is Gniza for them. Tamar Mutar Etein Lekoin Ejot. Vachlo Yishtamesh Mem Leom Kippurim Acher. Maika Lemeimar. According to him, what are you going to say? The only restriction of Menichim Sham is that they cannot be used again for the Avodah on Yom Kippur. But remember, when the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur wears the four white vestments, that's the equivalent of what the Kohanim Hejutim wear the rest of the year. And since the Kohanim Hejutim the rest of the year wear these four big day lavan, they could utilize these big day kuna that the Kohen Gadol wore in Yom Kippurim for a Kohen Hejot on a regular day during the rest of the year. The only thing Menichem Sham tells you is he may not be reused for Yom HaKippurim. So according to Rabbi Dosa, there's no limud from big day kuna about Gnizah and about Milah post the mitzvah, because the truth is you can use them post the mitzvah, and a Kohen Hejot could actually wear them post the mitzvah of Yom HaKippurim that's done by the Kohen Gadol. So if that's the case, how are you going to now have Shnei Ketuvim She'enam Melamdim? Mishum Davi Trumat HaDeshen Ve'egla Rufa Shnei Ketuvim Abayim Ke'achat. Because for him, you have two psukim. One is Trumat HaDeshen, and the other one is Egla Arufa, which Rashi over here again says that the source for that is Dichtiv Va'arfu Sham, that you do the Arifa Sham there in that location. And we learn from that Sham Tehek Vurata, that there on that location must be where it's buried. Again, this requirement for gniza or burial, which indicates an isur hana'ah, as well as an aspect of mi'ilah associated with it. So now you have Shnei Ketuvim Bayim Kechad, because both by Trumat HaDeshen, as well as by the Egla Rufa, there's a requirement of dealing with these items post the completion of the mitzvah in a manner that treats them as if they have an isur hana'ah that is still associated with them, and a problem of mi'ilah. That's the source that Rashi quotes. If you look down in the Balei HaTosafot, he says Egla Rufa Perish Rashi, and then he brings from the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which brings a different reason, which is Michtiba Kapara Kodoshim. Since it says Kaper L'Amcha Yisrael Asher Padita, Kapara is associated with Egla Rufa. The Gemara says Kapara is an aspect that is true of Korbanot. And therefore, when it says Kaper L'Amcha Yisrael about the Egla Rufa, that's comparing it, or in a sense, making it like a Korban. And that's what the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says. The reason it has a din of Mi'ilah is because it's compared to Kodoshim. So the Balei HaTosafot don't say it over here, but in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, they say they actually need both psukim. And that is because the Egla Arufa has three stages to it. There is the stage of bringing the Egla Arufa down to where it's going to be processed. At that point, there's no din of Mi'ilah, there's no din of Isur Hana'ah. Once they've brought it down to the location where they're going to do the Arifa by the Nachal, then there's a din of Isur Hana'ah and quote-unquote Mi'ilah. That's based on the din that's brought in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, that we treat it like Kodoshim. Since it's like Kodoshim, because it's bringing Kapara, it then has a status of Isur Hana'ah, or quote-unquote Mi'ilah, at that point in time. After you already do the Arifa, which is the mitzvah has now been completed, as far as its comparison to Kodoshim, the Mi'ilah and the Isur Hana'ah should have disappeared at that point in time. But that's what the pasuk over here that Rashi's quoting teaches us. Baruch Hu Sham, Sham Teik Vurata. That additional pasuk teaches you that even post the mitzvah, there still is a din of Isur Hana'ah or Me'ilah associated with the Egla Arufa. Once you have that, you have now two psukim. You have Tumat Adesh and Egla Arufa, Shnei Kedubim Vayim Echad, B'chol Shnei Kedubim Vayim Kechad, Eim Elamdim. So when it says, Anichol Amad Amar Eim Elamdim, there is a Deya that is not necessarily true. That one time the Torah writes something, that's a paradigm. Two times is also a paradigm. Only once you reach three times do we consider that to be the exception to the rule, rather than the rule itself. So here then you have a problem, because you only have two psukim that are giving us that information. Now for the Chachamim already, it's fine, because the Chachamim have three psukim. They have Tumat Adeshin, Big Day Kehuna, and Egla Rufa. But for Rabbi Dosa, who does not have the Big Day Kehuna, he has Tumat Adeshin, Egla Rufa, then how is he going to get to the point where Eim Melamdim? Elamad Amar Melamdim, that say two psukim and teach, three psukim cannot teach, they become the exception to the rule. Ma'ika the Meimar. So Gemara says, Utrei Mutek Dive. There are two Mi'utim that are mentioned. One by each of the psukim that we brought. By the Egla Rufa, it says Ha'arufa. It says the Egla Ha'arufa. Harufa is already in past tense. And Rashi learns from this. Zu, below Acheret, Kizu. So even though the mitzvah has already been done, and the Arufa has been done, it still calls it the Egla Ha'arufa. So that comes to teach you that Ha'arufa is uniquely associated, or this din is uniquely associated with the Egla Arufa. Doesn't have application by anywhere else. Behotam Ktiv, by the Tumat Adeshin, it says, Vissamo Eitzel HaMizbeach. Vissamo means it and nothing else. So therefore you have true Mi'utim. The Mi'utim come to teach you that these are unique dinim that cannot be extrapolated to anything else. Tazavot over here says, Kasha de Bechad Sagi. You only need one Mi'ut over here. You don't need both Mi'utim. But I think what you could suggest over here is that if you only had one Mi'ut, that would say that that is not a teaching paradigm. But that means the other one, which now is left alone because you have a miut by one to take it out of the world of limudim totally, that maybe the one that's residual then would become the paradigmatic in nature and you could extrapolate it to something else. That's why I have a miut by each one of them to teach you that each one is an exception to the rule and not paradigmatic in nature. And therefore, even according to the one who says, Shnei Ktuvim Abayim Kechad Milamdim, over here you would agree that they are in Milamdim because each one has a miut to say it's uniquely associated with that particular din, and not broadly applicable. Now the Gemara finally comes back to the issue that we're really after, which was, we were trying to understand in the Mishnah when it says, Chutz min Adam, that Adam does not have a din of Pigol, does not have a din of Tum'an, does not have a din of Notar, and we were over in the world of Mi'ilah. Now the Gemara explains how this is relevant to us, which is, Utlata Krayei B'Dam Lomali. These three psukim that are mentioned by Dam, what do I need them? You have the Liman of Ula, which is, Tativ Lachem, Shelachem Yeh, yeah, the limit of the Beit Rabbi Shmuel, which says the chapara netativ below the Me'ilah. Then Rabbi Yochanan's din is the hulafnei kapara kalachar kapara. So you have three different dinim that teach you the fact that there is no Me'ilah by dam. Obviously, you don't need all three of these. And so Rashi says that it's almost imenu inyan the Me'ilah tneu the inyan, and that's what we're going to explain here. So why do you need three psukim? The me'ute me'ilah minotar vetuma. Comes to teach you that these psukim, one of them teaches you that the ikar din of mi'ilah is excluded over here, whereas the other two mi'utim, one is used for a mi'ut by notar, and one of them is used for a mi'ut by tuma. The way it works is that the drasha of Rabbi Yochanan is used by mi'ilah, because that's the one that says, hu lifnei kapara kila achar kapara. That will be used by mi'ilah itself to teach us that there's no mi'ilah by the dam. Then the mi'ute mi'notar, as Rashi says, lachem means shelachem yehei, Keshar Chulin below Kodeshim. It'll be yours like any other Chulin and not like Kodeshim. And that will tell you that there is no din of Notar. The Kapara Netativ Kodeshim, I gave it to you to have Kapara like Kodeshim. But there'll be nothing else about it that'll be like Kodeshim, Ela Chulim. And therefore you won't have a din of Tuma that is associated with it. The Bali Dutz vote over here already asks, why do you need a Miut for Notar and a Miut for Tuma? We already saw in yesterday's daf that there is a Gzeir Shava of Chilulo between the two of them. And therefore, I would have known, once you tell me by one of them, I would have known the other. So the Bali Tosfot over here say, that's not really a problem, because if you had only one miut over here, you would have been mimayit notar, and not mimayit tuma. That's because we saw already that tuma has a much broader scope, because that is based on the pasuk in Emor that says, Beinezrumi kodshei beneisroi chalu achim kodji asher hein maktishim li. And that's by tuma. So by tuma, it has a broader scope to include almost all kodashim, so maybe dam would be included. So I only had one miut that would be mimayit notar, and left tuma as being relevant to dam. That's how the Baal HaTos would answer as to why there's a necessity here for two miutim, one for notar, one for tuma. But the truth is, based on what we did yesterday, that pasuk of Asher Hei Makdishim Li, we said that Velo Yechalu and that pasuk v'shnei chilulim akotu midaber. Speaking both about notar and tuma. If that's the case, then how could you separate between tuma and notar if they're both found in that pasuk? And that's what Baal HaTos raised yesterday, which is once you have this limud Velo Yechalu that says notar and tuma are both subsumed in this pasuk, then why do you ever need any limudim for notar? Because it's automatically, if you have the limud here by tuma, you'd also have it by notar. And so the answer has to be that yesterday when we said Lo Yechalulu, you can't take that so literally that it's as if notar is found in the pasuk, but rather it's just an indication to us that we should make the gzer shava of chilulo chilulo. And that already the Baal HaTos addressed and said, had we only had one, we would have assumed it applied to notar, but not to tuma because of the broader scope of tuma. And that's why you have two miutim over here. Now with regards to pigol, which also dam has no relevance, there the Gemara says, aval pigol lo tzarich kra. By pigol, we don't need a pasuk to tell us that it's not included in pigol. That's not. Because the Mishnah told us back on Daf Mem Gimel, Koshi Eshlo Matirim, Ben Adam, Ben Mizbeach, Chayavin Alav. Only something that has a matir that allows it either to be placed on the Mizbeach, or a matir that allows it to be consumed by an individual, then they have Chayavin Alav Mishum Pigol. They have a din of pigol. The Dam Gufei Matir. Dam does not have that. Dam is a matir for other things, but there's nothing that is matir, the Dam, to be placed on the Mizbeach. Now the Baal HaTos back on Daf Mem Gimel discuss the issue of dam maybe is a matir for the shirayim to go on the mizbeach. And actually the Baal HaTos say maybe our Gemara is a proof to the fact that there is some aspect of dam being a matir for something else, and also dam being shirayim that can be placed on the mizbeach. So here the Gemara would have said that there should have been a, why don't you need a miut over here? But why did you think you need a miut? If dam is a matir, why would there be any consideration for the fact that you need a miut by dam? Only if you assume that there's some aspect of dam that has application to it not being a matir, but rather also being something that's a residual from being a matir, like the shirayim adam, then you would have maybe a havamina to say that there is a din of pigol. That's what the Gemara here comes to dismiss and say, dam matirhu. Dam gufei, dam itself is a matir, and therefore there's nothing to discuss with regards to dam and pigol. So now the Gemara goes back to discuss something that we saw in yesterday's daf, which is that when it comes to an individual that has tumat aguf, person who is tamei and then consumes kodesh, which is otherwise known as tumat mikdash v'kodoshav, we saw that there are a number of sukim that tell us that you are chayav karet. And that's what the Gemara says. Now, I'm Rav Yochanan, shlosha karetot b'shlamim lama. Why do you have three karetot that are written by the shlamim? And over here we have both what's found in yesterday's daf that we spoke about in Perek Chav Bet and Parshat Emor, Pasuk Bet. It says the Beral Aron Vel Banav Yinazrumi Kodshei Bnei Israel Yeloi Chalulu Et Shem Kodshei Hashem Makdishim Li Ani Hashem. And then the subsequent pasuk which says Emor Aleihem Ledor Techem Kol Ish Asher Yikrav Mikol Zarechem La Kodashim Asher Yakdushu Bnei Israel Hashem VeTumato Alav And He Is Tamei VeNichrata Nefesh Ha'im Milefanai Ani Hashem. So there is one karet that is associated with Tumat HaGuf when you consume Kodesh. And then there are two psukim that are found in Vayikra Zayin and Parshat Tzav. The pasuk in Vayikra Zayin, pasuk Chav says, "Vanefesh Hashem tuchal basar mizevach shlamim ashel Hashem v'tumato alav," and he is tamei at that time. "V'nichrata nefesh ahi me'ameha," that's one karet. Then the subsequent pasuk in Chaf Aleph says, "V'nefesh ki tiga b'chol tamei b'tumat adam u'be'imat me'al b'chol sheketz tamei v'chal mibsar zevach shlamim ashel Hashem." It's explicit, he is tamei, and he eats from the kodoshim. "V'nichrata nefesh ahi me'ameha," so that there will be karet associated with that. So here you have three times that the Torah is telling you the same din, that someone with tumat aguf, who is consuming kodesh, will be subject to karet. Now the truth is that in Perek Zayin, in Parshat Tzav, in Perek Zayin, there it's talking about Zot Torat HaShlamim, it's in the Torah of Shlamim, there it does mention Shlamim in both instances. The pasuk that's found in Parshat Emor speaks more broadly about kodeshim and not Shlamim, and that actually will play out here in the answer that he gives. So Rabbi Yochanan says, you need three times the word karet, achat leklal, vachat leprat, vachat ledvarim sh'ina nechalim. Each one of them comes to teach you a din. The first of which is that there is a klal uprat. The klal is a reference to that pasuk that's found in Parshat Emor, because the Parshat Emor, it mentions kodeshim in general. It says, mikol zarechem ela kodeshim asher yakdishu b'nei Yisrael Hashem. any of the kodeshim, if you have tumat aguf and consume them, tumato alav nechrata nefeshahi, that there is karet associated with that. So there it's talking about the kalal, it's talking about kodeshim in general. Then echad the prat, one comes to narrow the scope of this to shlamim, because in the pasuk that's found in Parshat Tzav, it says we're speaking about a shetuchal basar mizevach hashlamim, and the second pasuk it says vacham mivsar zevach shlamim. So one of those is coming to teach you the prat. Now this is not a classic kalal uprat, where ein bachlal elamashe biprat, because over here the kalal and prat are nowhere near each other. You have a kalal in Parshat Emor, and a prat back in Parshat Tzav. So not only are they out of order, they're nowhere near each other. But rather, the kalal uprat over here is a limud from one of the shlosh esrei midot of Rabbi Shmuel, shator nidresh behem, which is kol davar sheya bichlal, v'yatza min haklal lamed, lo lamed atzmo yatza, al lamed haklal kulo yatza. So shlamim was subsumed under the category of kodeshim. So the pasuk in Parshat Emor that mentions kodeshim in general should have included shlamim as well. So then why does it mention shlamim in particular? That comes to teach you, yatza min haklal. Shlamim is yotze min haklal, to teach you that that has application, lahakishe leha, lomar lecha, ma shlamim yuchadim kodshei mizbeach, av kol kodshei mizbeach. Comes to teach you that that only things that are associated with kodshei mizbeach have a din, that if you consume them at tumat aguf, there's a chiyuv karet, to exclude kodshei bedek habayit. To tell you that only things that are kodshei mizbeach and not kodshei bedek habayit are subject to this din if you are consumed at tumat aguf, that you are chayav karet. So that's what the kalal uprat is. The kalal teaches you that it applies to kodeshim in general. Shlamim comes to teach you not that it's only shlamim, but tell you that shlamim, which should have been included under kodeshim, now was yatsa min haklal, it comes to teach you not about itself, but about all kodeshim, that they have to be similar to a shlamim that are kodeshim izbeach and not kodeshim bedek abayit. The Bayit Tosafot is somewhat bothered by this because of the fact that we, in yesterday's daf, spoke about the word ikrav that is found in Peshet Emor, to teach you that only things that have a matir, mashikarev matir, then they have a din of tumat aguf, or things that are not mishikrav, if they're placed into a kli sharet, then they have a din of tumat aguf. Well, from yikrav, you would also know that it's kodshei mizbeach, because only kodshei mizbeach have a matir, and only kodshei mizbeach are put into a kli sharet. Given that, you would have known the din of only kodshei mizbeach, not kodshei bedek habayit from yikrav. So why do I need two psukim to teach me the same din? That's only applicable to kodshei mizbeach, not to kodshei bedek habayit. Both the ikrav that is found in the pasuk in Emor, as well as the fact that you have shlamim mentioned in Tzav. So the Balei Tosafot know that had you just had ikrav, you'd have thought where applicable ikrav is demanded. So that means by kodshei mizbeach it's demanded, by kodshei bedek habayit it's not demanded, but you still have a din of tumat aguf with regards to bedek habayit. So that's why you need both psukim, the pasuk of shlamim that's yotzei min haklal, as well as the pasuk of ikrav. But then he asks, why do you need the pasuk of Yikrav at all? Don't we have the drasha of Kol Tahor Yuchal Basar, which is a pasuk found in Parshat Tzav that indicates that when a Tahor can eat the Korban, then a Tamei is Chayav for Tumat Aguf. So isn't that telling you the same information as Yikrav? And here, so the Bayit HaTzafot give a Tzrichuta, which is that had you only had one of the psukim, you would have not known all the information over here. He says, V'yesh lemar tzrichi, V'yitak havrachmana Kol Tahor, had you just written Kol Tahor, below Taknadav Ikrav, meaning that had it written only the Pasuk that's found in Tzav, and not Ikrav, Havamina, the Kodim Zrika Chashiv Nitar L'Torim. I would have thought that before Zrikat Tadam, it's already Mutar L'Torim, because there in the Pesukim in Tzav, it says Kol Tahor Yochal Basar, that only a Torim can eat the Basar. So the juxtaposition of that to the Isser of Tumat Aguf teaches you that only when they meet would have been Mutar, for the Basar Kodeshim would have been Mutar, to a Tahor, is there an Easter of Tumat Aguf? So had I only had that pasuk of Kol Tahor, that would have told me that even maybe possibly before Zrikat Adam, you still would have been Chayav Tumat Aguf because you have the potential to do Zrikat Adam. This Basar Kodeshim could be eaten by Tahor. Not now, until after Zrikat Adam, but since it has the potential to be eaten by a Kol Tahor, that's enough to make you Chayav at Tumat Aguf. So along comes Ikrav to tell you that the din only applies once the matir hits the Mizbeach. So Tumat Aguf is only an Isur, or the Isur Karet, only goes triggered by the fact that you've done the Zrikat Adam. So that's why Yikrav comes to teach you. Also, Yikrav comes to also teach you things that don't have a Matir, or not going to the Mizbeach, where the Tahor is not eating them, that when they go into the Kli Sharet, that's the trigger for the problem of eating them at Tumat Aguf. And Ikatav Rana Yikrav, had you only had the Pasuk of Yikrav, Lokatav Kol Tahor, Havamino Afilu Pigulim V'Notarot, then I would have thought, even something that's Pigul and Notar, if you consume it with tumat aguf, that you'll be chayav. Because I would have said, anything where the matir went on the mizbeach and is fine, yikrav, is subject to the din of tumat aguf. I wouldn't have thought to say that, oh, if it's not raw wood to tahor, it then is asur to a tamei. But that's what the Kol Torah comes to teach you, that things like pigul and notar, which are restricted to a tahor, they're not subject to the restriction of eating it with tumat aguf. So in that way, the Baalei Tosfot show that there's its richuta for both of these psukim or both of these limudim. Vachat, the last of the three psukim of Karet by Shlamim, we said according to Rabbi Yochanan, is coming to teach us that even inedible objects are still subject to this din. If someone consumes an inedible object, bit tumat aguf, they will be chayab karet. And that's what the third one is for. The problem with that, obviously, is for Rabbi Shimon on our Mishnah. Because Rabbi Shimon on our Mishnah says, Dvarim sheinei achalim, ein chayvin aleihem mishum tumah. That things are not edible, are not subject to this din of tumat aguf being chayab karet if you consume them. So letuyei, why do you need a third pasuk or third karet according to him? Letuyei chataot hapnimiyot. That's to include the chataot hapnimiyot. Salka dat chamin, I would have thought, oh, my Rabbi Shimon, that we know that Rabbi Shimon says with regards to pigol, that the shlamim is the paradigmatic case of pigol. And through that he says, any korban that's not brought in the mizbeach chitzon, like a shlamim, which is brought in the mizbeach chitzon, ain't chayim ala mishum pigol. You won't be subject to pigol in that instance because it doesn't fit the paradigm of shlamim, which is what dictates what is considered to be pigol. So I would have thought, mishum tuma nami lo lechayiv. Just like you're not chayav for pigol, so too you won't be chayav for tuma. Kamash malan, that is not the case. So now if you look in the Shita Mekubetzet Ot Aleph, he says that's a very difficult explanation. Didn't we just have a whole list in our Mishnah of items that are not subject to pigol, that are subject to tuma? There is no correlation between them. So why would you have thought, since it's not subject to pigol, it won't be subject to tuma? There's no such connection. And he says over here, Bekasha, the mashma, the haba hatalya. The Gemara here sounds like the two are connected. Vare, and he says, how can you say that? Don't we have the example of the Minchat Nisachim, or the other examples that I brought in our Mishnah in Mem Gimel, that told us that even though there's no din of pigol, there's still a din of tuma. The Shita Mekubetzet over here gives a slightly different formulation of the Gemara, which avoids this problem. It says, "Lekach nira dehaki perusho." This is what you have to explain. Mishum damar shlamim. Since it says over here by tuma that the reason that the shlamim are written here is to tell you that it's a yotze min haklal to teach you about tuma in general. V'sachadat ramina ki heichid Rabbi Shimon darish mishlamim. Similar to what Rabbi Shimon says by pigul, that he's darshaning by shlamim, the gabe pigul davka b'davashu amizbeach chitzon kishlamim chayvin alav mishum pigul. Only things or korbanot that are brought in mizbeach chitzon like shlamim will be subject to pigul. Hachanami neima, the Rabbi Shimon darish mishlamim. He would make the same drasha with regards to the shlamim. Not that he's saying there's a parallel between pigul and tuma, but rather what the Gemara is saying is just like he was darish by pigul, that the meaning of having a shlamim is the paradigm. Teaches you that only korbanot on the mizbeach chitzon are subject to pigol. Maybe even doresh the same thing by tuma. That if tuma is driven by a paradigm of shlamim, it also will have the same limud, which is the gabe tuma dafka davar shu al mizbeach chitzon kishlamim chayivin alav mishum tuma. Only korbanot that are brought on the mizbeach chitzon will be subject to the din of tumat aguf like the shlamim. And then kamash malan that we don't say that, and that's why you need that extra pasuk. So now Gemara continues, quotes from our Mishnah. Nomi Rabbi Shimon. Nomi Rabbi Shimon is not mentioned in our Mishnah, but Rashi says it was found in our Mishnah. He says, Achi Garcina, Nomi Rabbi Shimon. We don't have it in our Mishnah, but he says, B'davar she'darko l'echol chayav, v'kach shamati mi beit midrasho shel Rabbeinu Yaakov. So Rashi quotes from his Rebbeim that the meaning of Nomi Rabbi Shimon means Amar Rabbi Shimon. As if the word is Ne'um. He's giving some sort of statement or declaration that he is making with regards to this issue of tuma, and he says that it only has application by darkat lo'echol, but does not have application by things that are inedible. Now, itmar, Rabbi Yochanan v'Reish Lakish, we know that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shlakish were baal plugtot, v'Rabbi Elazar v'Rabbi Yossi v'Rabbi Chanina. And Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yossi v'Rabbi Chanina were also baal plugtot, they're tamidim of Rabbi Yochanan, that were normally baal plugtot. So that's important because the Gemara now says, chad mihai zuza, one from this pair, meaning Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, one of the two of them said, "Bechad mihai zuza," and then the Gemara says one from the other pair, which is Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina. One from each pair had a machloket. We don't know which one of each pair it is, but one of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish had this opinion, And one of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Hanina had the alternate opinion. Chanamar, one of them said, and here they're saying about our Mishnah. Our Mishnah that says that Tumah has application by these items that don't necessarily have a din of pigol. There, that's qualified by this statement. Machloket b'tumat basar. The machloket between them is about basar that becomes tamei. Aval b'tumat aguf, divrei hakol einu loke. When it comes to tumat aguf, everybody agrees that there is no malkot. Tumat basar is when kodeshim themselves become tamei. There are two problems of tumah. There's one problem of tumah, which is the kodeshim themselves become tamei. And then even if a tohor eats them, there's a problem with that. That has a chiyuv malkot associated with it. And there is a separate problem, which is if you have tumat aguf, the individual who's going to consume the kodeshim is tamei, but tumat aguf, then there's an iser karet for him to eat kodeshim, even if they are tehorim. So those are the two types of tumah. Tumat basar is a reference to the tumah of the kodeshim themselves, where the individual is tahor. Tumat aguf is where the individual consuming the kodeshim is tamei, but the kodeshim are tahor. The difference between them being that with tumat basar, if one who's tahor consumes tumat basar, he gets malkot. The other hand, someone with tumat aguf who consumes kodeshim that are tehorim, he will be chayav karet. So what they're saying now is that the machloket about whether inedible items are included or not included under the restriction of tumah, that machloket is only true by tumat basar. The reason for that is that we already learned earlier in the Gemara that the pasuk that is found in Parshat Tzav that says, "Ba'basar sheyiga b'chol tamei lo yeachel ba'eshi sareif, ba'basar kol tahor yochal basar." And we noted already that the word "ba'basar" appears twice in the pasuk. It's the subject of the pasuk, and it's repeated twice unnecessarily because it's clear that it's the subject of the pasuk. That extraneous "ba'basar" came to include etzim and levona, but over there we're speaking about a basar sheyiga b'chol tamei. They were talking about tumat basar. So over there, there's a machloket as to whether there's this nimud of basar, which the Chachamim subscribe to, and say that even inedible objects are included under tumat basar, or the acceptance of tumah, and therefore if you consume them, you're going to be chayav malkot. Rabbi Shimon disagrees and says that he doesn't have that limud or that riboy of habasar. And that's where the machloket is. But by tumat aguf, where we have no riboy to bring in inedible objects, divrei hakol einu loke. In that case, everybody agrees you don't get malkot. Chadamar, and the other of one of the pairs, says, k'machlok b'zo, kach machlok b'zo. Just like they argue by tumat basar, they also argue by tumat aguf, or my taima. Why should they? The truth is that the riboy is only found by tumat basar. Came into karina be basar, sho yiga b'chol tamei, karina be b'tumato alav. The reason is because there's a hekesh. There's a juxtaposition of the psukim. In Vayikra Zayin, pasuk yutet, it speaks about tumat basar. Basar sheyiga b'chol tamei. The subsequent pasuk chav speaks about tumat aguf. V'nefesh asher tuchal basar mizevach shlomim asher Hashem v'tumato alav v'nechvata nefeshim me'ameh. So you have tumat basar in pasuk yutet, tumat aguf in pasuk chav. There's really a correlation or connection between them, and that's exactly what they're saying here. When I have a din of basar sheyiga b'chol tamei, when there's a problem if the object becomes tamei if you consume it, so too will there be a problem when you have tumat aguf and you're consuming that object. And since now we're saying Vabasar includes Eitzim in Livona, these inedible objects, nevertheless, they're included under the Tumat Basar, so too they'll be included under the restriction of Tumat Aguf. So that'll be the view of the Chachamim. Rabbi Shimon will disagree and say, since he doesn't have the Riboy by Tumat Basar, he also doesn't have the Riboy by Tumat Aguf. That's the Machloket between them. Rav Tov Yomi Matni Hachi. That's the version of this machloket according to Rav Tov Yomi. Over here, the Bali Tosfot raises a serious issue with regards to the Gemara's assumptions. He questions that from Rabbi Yochanan, and then the Shita Mikubetzet, on top of that, asks from our Mishnah. The Gemara here assumes there's a possibility in Rav Tov Yomi's explanation that everybody will agree, divrei hakol, with regards to tumat aguf, that it will have no application by inedible objects. So the Bali Tosfot say, wait a minute. Didn't Rabbi Yochanan before suggest that the reason you had three psukim of karet by tumat aguf was one to teach you the klal, one to teach you the prat, and the third one's to teach you that the reim sheinam nachalim are subject to tumat aguf? So why can't you at least prove from here that Rabbi Yochanan is one of the opinions that would say k'machlok b'zu, kach machlok b'zu? Because Rabbi Yochanan's explanation assumes that there is a machlok between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim with regards to tumat aguf. And for that reason, he says, the karet comes to teach you about the reim sheinam nachalim. According to Rabbi Shimon, who doesn't hold of that, he uses it for a different reason, to teach you about the chatot of pnimiyot. But then, that's clear that Rabbi Yochanan believes there is a machloket between them. So why can't the Gemara at least conclude that Rabbi Yochanan believes, k'machloket b'zo, kach machloket b'zo? That's the question of the Balei Tosafot. The Shita Mikubetzet in Ot Lamed adds on. If you're saying that there is no machloket by tumat aguf, there's only a machloket by tumat basar, then what are you going to do with our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says there's a machloket between the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon. The Halel Peirashnu, the Gemara already explained our Mishnah as sourcing from Ve'inazru, the Mashmah Marei tumat aguf, which says that the Mishnah itself is speaking about tumat aguf. So if the Mishnah is speaking about tumat aguf, it's clear there's a machloket Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah. So how can you make a claim over here in Rav Tavyumi's suggestion that Divrei Hakol by Tumat Aguf, that there is no din of inedible objects being included? So the Balei HaTosafot and the Shita Mikubetzet both give the same answer. That what we're saying over here is that they agree that there is no Malkot, but that's not necessarily true of the Chiyuv Karet, which is that generally when there is a Chiyuv Karet associated with any violation, if a person violates that B'mezid, Beit Din gives the individual Malkot, and then they're released from the Karet. So Malkot is instead of the Karet. So what we're saying over here is that the Din of Karet and Malkot will be separated. And that is that when we say Divrei HaKol, that by Tumata Guf Ein Lokeh, that doesn't mean that there's no Chiyub Karet. That doesn't mean there's no Machloket between them. It just means that everybody agrees you don't get Malkot for these inedible objects. There still will be a Chiyub Karet if you consume these objects according to the Chachamim. For Rabbi Shimon, there will be no Malkot and no Karet for them. So they're Machloket, and that's what the terminology that's used over here is speaking about Malkot. But that doesn't affect their opinions with regards to Karet. And that way you can't prove anything for Rabbi Yochanan, because Rabbi Yochanan was speaking about the Karet, not about the Malkot. As well as the fact that our Mishnah was speaking about Karet, not about the Malkot. And therefore, whatever Rabbi Yochanan is explaining within these positions is not really relevant necessarily to the Mishnah or Rabbi Yochanan, because the Mishnah and Rabbi Yochanan were speaking about Karet, and over here we're speaking about the Malkot associated with these restrictions. Rabbi Kahana Matnihochi. On the other hand, Rabbi Kahana had a different version of the Machloket over here. And that's because their Machloket focused not on the ratio of the Mishnah, but on the safe of the Mishnah, meaning on Rabbi Shimon's statement. Chad mei zuza v'chad mei zuza. One from each of these groupings. A seifa said about the seifa. Chad amar machloket betumat haguf. The machloket between Rabbi Shimon and Chachamim is about tumat haguf. Aval b'tumat basar, divrei hakol lokeh. By tumat basar, everybody agrees you get malkot. Or in essence, what they're saying here is, by tumat basar, we have the riboy of ha-basar. And that riboy teaches you, by tumat basar, itzim levanar included. And Rabbi Shimon will agree with that. That he does not argue on. The question is, do you make the hekesh? Do you assume whatever is true by tumat basar is also true by tumat aguf? So Chachamim say the juxtaposition of these psukim indicates that the halacha that applies by tumat basar will also apply by tumat aguf. Bishimon says we have a riboy by tumat basar. We don't have a riboy by tumat aguf, so it only applies by tumat basar. It doesn't apply by tumat aguf, and that is their machloket according to this view. And the other opinion, which would then be accord with the second opinion above as well, in the first version of this from Rav Tavyumi, is that they disagree in both instances. They argue about Tumat Basar, and they also argue about Tumat Aguf. Tumat Basar as to whether there's a riboy of a Basar. If you don't think it's true by Tumat Basar, you're obviously not going to think it's true by Tumat Aguf. Amar Rava, Rava says, Mistavra k'man damar, k'machloke bezo, kach machloke bezo. Makes sense to say whatever machloket is apparent by Tumat Aguf is also true by Tumat Basar. My time up. Came in the lo karina baby tumata ala benichrata lo karina baby basar sheyigah b'chol tamei lo yeachel. So again, here he speaks to the hekesh or the juxtaposition of these two psukim of tumat basar and tumat aguf, and he says if by tumat aguf you don't think there is a riboy or you don't think inedible objects are included, so too by tumat basar you're not going to think that, and vice versa. If you think there is a din by tumat aguf or there is a din by tumat basar, you're going to think it has application by both of them because of the hekesh of the psukim over here. Now the only problem with that is, Vamarmar, don't we have the riboy? Vabasar, lerabot itzim, ulibona, leposlabalma. Don't we have this riboy of habasar? So what are you going to do with that? If you're going to say, kumachloka bezo, kach machloka bezo, that means according to Rabbi Shimon, there's no din of inedible objects being subject to tumat aguf. Just like there, there's no din, so too by tumat basar, there is no din of tum'ah with inedible objects. But don't we have a reboy from the pasuk v'abasar? What's Rabbi Shimon going to do with that reboy? So the answer is that he thinks that reboy is the posla bi'alma. He comes to simply say that it's pasol. Rashi says here male derabonon hi. It's a din derabonon because machta ba'alma hi. It's not a din d'oraita. It's a din derabonon. that the Rabbanan imposed a din of Tumat Basar on these items, even though they're inedible objects, they're not Ochlim, they should not be Mikabel Tumah. Nevertheless, they say they are Pasul, and yes, they brought a Pasuk to say that, but that Pasuk is just an Asmachta B'Alma. That's the way Rashi learns it. But if you look in the Shita Mekubetzet Ovav, he quotes Rashi and says, Perisha Kudris, Malad the Rabbononhi, Bekras Machta B'Alma, Bekasho, Debechulin Muchach. In the Gemara in Chulin, it says, the Oseh Sheni L'Tumah. Inedible objects, the Itzim and Lubonah, make something into a Sheni L'Tumah. Now, if you're talking about Tumah de Rabbanan, how can it make something into a Sheni L'Tumah? Conveying Tumah is only true when you're in Isser Tumah Midoraita, not when you're in Isser Tumah Midorabbanan. And from that, the Shidim Mekubetzet says, it seems like this is a Din Doraita, not a Din de Rabbanan. And therefore, he suggests over here, V'yesh Lomar, the Poslua Ma'alma, below Lukot Alav. That what it means over here, Pasul, means that it is Pasul, but there is no Makot over here. Ul Olam Doraita. It is a Din Doraita. So these inedible objects, even Rabbi Shimon will agree that a Basar includes these items in Tumata Basar, but they're only included in Tumata Basar that they make the item Pasul. So for Rabbi Shimon, even though these Basar doesn't come to include them in the Din of Tumat, if one consumes them, there will be no Makot associated with that. Nevertheless, these items do become Psulim. They are Pasul, or render Pasul, when they become Tameh. Tosfot over here, as an aside, note that this Machloket over here is not necessarily related to the Machloket of Yochanan and Rish Lakish, where before we discussed this issue of Tumat Basar and the Machloket between them, and Abaye Verova argued about in the positions of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish about a Tahor Shachal Basar Kodesh Tameh Lifnei Zrikat Adam. Over there we had a Machloket between Abaye and Rova. Abaye said Divrei HaKol Lokeh, and Rova said Divrei HaKol Eino Lokeh. So now you maybe should be able to prove from here in our Gemara as whether Abaye Rova is right. The Baye Tosfot say you can't do that because I can reconcile Baye's position and Rova's position with this Gemara and not necessarily influence what they were arguing about over there. Now we bring a Mishnah. The Mishnah should be familiar to us because these are issues that we discussed back on the first daf of the Masechta. And that is L'shem Shishat Varim HaZevach Nizbach, that a Korban must be shechted for the following six items. L'shem Zevach, it has to be brought for the particular Korban. So this is Rashi notes over here, this is the issue of Shinui Kodesh. You have to bring it for the Korban that is supposed to be brought, not for another Korban. L'shem Zoveach, as Rashi notes over here, that's the issue of Shinui Baalim, that one may not change the owner or the person for whom the Korban is being brought, and that is what we know as Shinui Baalim. L'shem Hashem, it has to be brought, L'shem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. L'shem Ishim, brought for the fire. Again, the Gemara will discuss what that means in each of these items. L'shem Reach, it has to be brought something that produces a nice aroma. L'shem Nichoach, and something that brings Nachat Ruach. So we'll explain all of these in the Gemara. V'chatat v'asham l'shem chet. And the chatat v'asham have to be brought for the particular violation which they are coming to be mechaper for. Amar Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says, Af mi shelo haya bilibo l'shem echad mikol eilu, kasher. Even if someone has nothing in mind, had none of these issues in mind, the korban is kasher. Shehu t'nai beit din. Because that is a condition or an institution of the beit din. She'en ha-machshava olechet el-achar oveid. Because the Machshava only follows the Oveid. What Rashi notes over here is, this is the reason, or the nimuk, for why Beit Din instituted this. We have a situation in which the Baalim are bringing the Korban, but the Baalim are not the processors of the Korban. The Baalim know which Korban they're bringing. The Baalim know who the Korban is for, it's for themselves. And the Baalim also know which Chet it's being brought for. They know all of this information. But when they give it over to the Kohen is processing the animal, isn't as connected to those issues, or is not as aware of those issues. And therefore, there's a high likelihood that the Kohen is processing it, make a mistake, and bring the Korban for the wrong type of Korban, or bring the Korban for the wrong individual, or for the wrong chait. So what the Chachamim instituted, or what Beit Din said is, better the Kohanim, who are the Ovdim, have nothing in mind. If they have nothing in mind, then tonight Beit Din will kick in, and say that these six things that are required of the Kohen, all of them will be applicable to the Korban. On the other hand, if he has a Machshava, there's a possibility or a high likelihood that he'll have an improper Machshava, and that actually will ruin the Korban. So better that he has no Machshava, and we say there's a Tanai Beit Din that picks up for him and puts in the right Machshava, rather than demanding of him to have positive Machshava. And so Rashi over here says that our fear is that he will say the wrong thing. Maybe he'll come along this Kohen and say the wrong thing. From here, first of all, you can see that Rashi thinks that the word Machshava in these instances means the Meimar, to articulate it. Balei HaTosafot back on that Bet Amud Bet asked the question as to why you need the Tanai Beitin at all. Rabbi Yossi says that if you do it Stam, it's okay. Well, if it's Stam, it's okay, then what does the Tanai Beitin do for you? If you have nothing in mind, the thing would have been kasher. So there, the Rishonim and the Baalei Tosafot give two suggestions as to what possibly would have been the Havamina had you not had a Tanai Beitin. That is, either if you had not had a Tanai Beitin, you would have thought the machlok between Rabbi Yossi and the Tanakama is about a Stam Machshava, which is that Rabbi Yossi says that if you have no makshav at all, it is ksheira. But the Tanakama would have said that if you have no makshav at all, it's pasul, even bidiavad. So the Tanai Beitin comes along to teach you that everybody agrees that there is a Tanai Beitin. The question is, what does the Tanai Beitin do? The Tanakama says the Tanai Beitin makes it that bidiavad, you're okay. The chatchila, you should still have a makshava. But bidiavad, if you didn't, it's okay. Rabbi Yossi comes along and says, even the chatchila, we don't want you having a makshava, we'd rather that you rely on the Tanai Beitin. So that's what the Tanai Beitin adds, which is that there is no psul if you have a stam makshava. Or the other way to formulate it is to say that what Rabbi Yossi meant was that you don't have to articulate. You don't have to articulate these items, but you can have a makshava about these items. And that's what you would have thought Rabbi Yossi's opinion is, that if you do it stam, which is you don't articulate it, but you have it in mind, then it would work. But that means if you had nothing in mind, it would be pasul. Along comes the Tanai Beitin to teach you, even if you have nothing in mind, the Tanai Beitin says that we make it as if you did have the proper machshavot. And so therefore the conclusion here from the Tanai Beitin is that you now have a machlok between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yossi, where you have no machshava at all, what is the status of the item? The Tanakama says when you have no machshava at all, kasher b'diabat. The chatchila, you should have the proper machshava. And if you blink, machshava means, b'meimar means to articulate, then you should articulate it. And for Rabbi Yossi, even if you have nothing in mind whatsoever, it still is kasher l'chatchila, because that's what the Tanai Beitin instituted, and we prefer you to use the Tanai Beitin rather than articulating or having a machshava, because that is susceptible to problems, as Rashi says, d'ma'at to the meimar, shalo lishmo. Now the Gemara comes to explain to us, how do we know that these are the six things that you have to have in mind? So, Amar Yehuda Marav, Ola, L'shem Ola. So the Gemara is quoting a pasuk, as Rashi notes over here, which is Ola Ishei Reach Nichoach LaShem. And from each of those items in the pasuk, Ola Ishei Reach Nichoach LaShem, from each of those items, we're going to learn out the proper intent that you have to have with regards to the korban. As Rashi points out, the pasuk that you're quoting of Ola Reach Nichoach Ishei LaShem does not have the word Zvicha mentioned in it. Doesn't mention Shchita. Our Mishnah in particular here says L'shem Shisha Dvarim Hazevach Nizbach. It's particularly associated with Shchita, these items. So then, where do you find that in the pasuk? Ola reach nichoach l'Hashem. So Rashi says you actually learn that out of the pasuk of Yikriv mizevach hashlamim ishel l'Hashem. So over there it says mizevach hashlamim. That's the Shchita. So over there we have the association of Shchita together with shlamim ishel l'Hashem, which was parallel to Ola ishel l'Hashem. Now what's missing from that pasuk is reach nichoach. That's what Rashi notes over here. Even though we need the pasuk in shlamim to teach us that it's associated with Shchita, nevertheless, the Gemara quotes the pasuk from Ola, because Ola contains all the items that are mentioned in this Mishnah that you need kavanah for, are mentioned in that pasuk, and not by the pasuk in Shlamim. That's why the Gemara opts for the pasuk in Ola, even though it needs the pasuk in Shlamim to teach you that this is true by the din of Shchita. That leads some of the Rishonim, including the Rambam, to say that the din that is mentioned in this pasuk is associated particularly with Shchita. But if you look back at the Baalei Tosafot and Daf Bet Amud Aleph, they spent a lot of time trying to show that this din is not only applicable by Shchita, but it has to do with any of the avodot korban. You can see that in the first Tosafot in the Masechta, where he says, "Hu adin kabbalah v'olacha v'zrika." And then the Baalei Tosafot go on to ask, how come over here in our Gemara we're about to bring the source for the fact that there is shinui kodesh from the word ola, when the Gemara back in the beginning of the Masechta brings the Shinui Kodesh from different pasuk and Daf Dalet, and there the Baalei Tosafot say, "Yesh lomar dekra dehotam b'ktarat emurim v'hacha b'avodat adam." There, the Mishnah in the beginning of the Masechta was speaking about the avodat adam. That's what Tosafot noted before, that it's true by Zvicha, but it's also true by Kabbalah Holacha v'Zrika. That Shinui Kodesh has application by all of them. Our Mishnah comes to add to that not only those avodat adam, but even B'yesh Lomar the Kradotim Haktarat Emurim comes to teach you that even by Haktarat Emurim there's a din of these, that you have to have these six things in mind for the processing of the Korban, which is true not only by Zvicha, by Shchita, but true by the Arba Avodot Adam, but it's also from our Mishnah now also true by Haktarat Emurim. So now we're going to go through the Pasuk and explain each item here. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Ola, l'shem Ola. That's about Shinui Kodesh. You have to bring it for the right type of Korban. La Fuke, l'shem Shlamim, Dolo. If you bring it for an alternate Korban, then the Korban, even though it's kasher, will not be meratzer and not provide the kapara or the discharging of the obligation that was necessary. Ishei, that means to the fire, l'shem Ishim. It has to be brought for the fire, la Fuke, kivava, Dolo. It comes to be excluded if you put it on, kivava. Rashi claims over here, kivava means that you're putting it on for it to be a barbecue. If you're placing it on the mizbeach for the ishim, for the fire to consume it, then that's proper kavanah. If you have in mind for it to be barbecued, that's the improper kavanah. The Ramban, on the other hand, says, it's the difference between putting the meat on to be consumed entirely by the fire, that's ishay, versus kivava is where you're putting on the meat with the intention to take it off before it is consumed completely. Another suggests that kivava comes from the word kibui, which means that you have to put it on hot coals, or coals that will consume it, not on coals that are burning out and will not consume the basar. So that's what you learn for the Shem Ishim or Ishei. Then it says, Reach Nichoach LaShem. Reach comes to teach you the Shem Reach. That has to be for a positive aroma. Lafuke Evarim Shitzalan Behelan Delo. Comes to exclude a case where you already roasted the meat and then place it on the mizbeach. When you roast meat, it has a very enticing, succulent type of aroma that emanates from it. So that's the reyach. That reyach is what you have to put the korban at the mizbeach. Therefore, if you already roasted the meat before you put it on the mizbeach, it will not have that aroma that emanates from it, and that would be problematic. And so that's what it means, that you have to do with the shem reyach. Lafukei avarim shetzalan ve'alam delo, damar rav yudah marav. Avarim shetzalan ve'alan ein behem mishum reyach. They don't have a din of reyach. You don't accomplish the din of reyach. Nicholach, l'shem hanachat ruach. That means that you want to please the Kodesh Baruch Hu. You want to do it in a manner that discharges the obligations that Hashem placed upon you, or the way that Hashem demanded that we bring the korban. That's a nachat ruach, that you want to please Hashem. You want to do that which He commanded. La Hashem teaches you the shem mishamar v'ayolam. You have to bring the korban, the shem of Kodesh Baruch Hu. So that's how you know the items of the pasuk, which is Ola, Ishei, Reach, Nichoach, Lashem. That deals with five of the six items. They don't bring a proof over here for the aspect of Shinu Balim. And that, the Bali Tosafot, back on Daf Bet Amud Aleph, discuss why there is no source for Shinu Balim over here, which is the fact that we said that this Mishnah is speaking about Hatarat Emurim. By Hatarat Emurim, it doesn't make sense to speak about the Shein Balim. Since Shinu Balim only has application by Shechita, Amanat Lizrok, or Mikabel Molich, Amanat Lizrok. So therefore, it's not relevant by Haktarat Emurim. That's why the Gemara never brings a proof to the fact that Shinui Balim has application over. And that's why the puzzle we're speaking about only brings Shinui Kodesh and not Shinui Balim. Now we go back to a statement that we saw actually earlier in the Gemara, which is Amar Yudah Marav, Chatat Sheshachta L'Shem Ola. If you bring a Chatat L'Shem Ola, Psula. It's problematic. That's what is known as lo lishma. And we already noted at the beginning of the Masechta that by a chatat and a pesach, if you do them shlo lishma, they are psulin. So over here, where you brought the chatat, and instead of bringing it as a chatat, you bring it as an olah, that is psula. On the other hand, if you bring it the shem chulin, it is kshera. If you bring it as chulin instead of a korban, it's kshera. Amar Rav Elazar, my time with the Rav. What's the reasoning behind Rav's position? Because the pasuk says, "V'lo yichalulu et kodshei bnei Yisrael." Kodshei yirimu la'Hashem. Rabbi Elazar says, "We dash from that kodashim mechalalim kodashim." Because it says, "Lo yichalulu et kodshei bnei Yisrael." What profanes kodashim? Bein chulin mechalalim kodashim. On the other hand, chulin cannot profane that which is kodesh. Meitiv Rabo, is that really true? Look at our Mishnah. Amar Rav Yotzi, Ap Mishal Haya B'Lubo L'Shem Echad Mikol Eileh Kasher, Shehu T'nai Beitin. So if you have nothing in mind, if they're static and you're not thinking anything, that's where the Korban is Kasher. Taima Shalo Haya B'Lubo Kalal. That's because he had nothing in mind. Ha Haya B'Lubo L'Shem Chulin Pasol. Had he had anything in mind, including L'Shem Chulin, that would have been problematic. So the Diyuk of our Mishnah seems to indicate otherwise, that even when you have a Machshevet Chulin of Vipasol, the only time it works is when you have nothing in mind, when you're thinking absolutely nothing. So Amar Leah Abaye, Dilma, maybe the way to express this is, Lo Haya Klal Kasher. If you have nothing in mind, you have static, you're thinking nothing at all, then the Korban is completely Kasher. That's the Tnai Beit Din. Umiratzeh. And therefore, it's not only Kasher, but it also accomplishes what you want the Korban to accomplish. Haya B'Libo L'Shem Chulin. If you have in mind for Chulin, Kasher V'Inu Miratzeh. The Korban is Kasher. It's equivalent of bringing it Shelo Lishma. So it is kasher, but it is not miratzeh. So there actually would be now three different categories of korbanot that you can bring. You have a korban where you have in mind to bring it, instead of as a chatat, as an olah. In that case, it'll be completely pasul. There'll be a case where you bring a chatat l'shem chulin, that korban will be kasher, but it will be enu miratzeh. And then there's a korban that you bring where you have no makshava whatsoever, that korban will be kasher umiratzeh. So that's a bias says you can explain the Mishnah in that way, and therefore your diuk of Rabbi Yossi would then not disprove what Rav said before. And then along comes Rabbi Lazar and qualifies Rav's statement and gives it finer detail and says, Amar Rabbi Lazar, Katat sheshechta l'shem chulin k'shera. That's what Rav said, that if you shechta l'shem chulin, it's kasher. That means if you know it's a chatat, and you shechta l'shem chulin, it is a kasher korban. Whether it means kasher umiratzeh, or kasher b'einu miratzeh, will depend on a bayis answer. Mishum chulin psula. On the other hand, if you think the korban is chulin, you don't know it's a chatat, and you shechta l'shem chulin, then it is psula. K'debay minei shmo miravuna. That's similar to the question that was posed by Shmuel. Rav Huna, minayin l'mitasek b'kodashim shehu pasul. How do you know when you're playing around or you're doing things with kodashim unintentionally that it is pasul? Shenamar, because the pasuk says v'shachat et ben habakar lifnei Hashem, that you shech the ben habakar before Hashem. Ad shedei shchita l'shem ben bakar. You must have the shchita for the particular animal or for the particular korban that is being brought. You don't need l'shma, but you need at least kavanah that you're doing it l'shem kodeshim. Amalei, Shmuel, Zuk, Zizbek, Rav Huna, B'yadenui. That we already know. You're not bringing us anything new. We knew there was a pasuk that said that you have to have intent for kodeshim in order for it to be kasher. Our problem is that in kodeshim, when you only have something mentioned once, that means it's a din l'chatchila, not a din b'diavad. What we wanted to know is la'akev minayin. Where's this second pasuk that gives you that information? That makes it la'akev. If you don't have proper kavanah l'kodeshim, that it'll be pasul. Amalei, because it says, l'tzonchem tizbachuhu, l'da'atchem zvichu. You must do the shchita, l'tzonchem, meaning out of ratzon, out of will, but it also means l'da'atchem. You must understand, or you must be aware of what you're doing when you do the shchita. So l'ratzon means you're doing this willingly, but you're also aware of what you're doing. It's done with intent, and that's why it comes to exclude a case of mitasek. So over here you have two psukim telling you that when you do the shkita, you must be intending for kodoshim. That tells you if you don't have that intent, even b'diavad, it's going to be psula. And that's what Rabbi Elazar is saying. If you shech the animal, the shum chulin, we have no idea that it's kodoshim. That's going to be pasul, because that's called mitasek. Now over here, the Baal HaTosafot say that what Rashi explains as mitasek is improper. Rashi says that the sek is a case where you're throwing a knife at the wall, and happens to shech the animal on the way to the wall. That's what he calls mitasek. The Baal HaTosafot say that's not called mitasek. They prove that from the Gemara in Chulin, where the Chachamim don't require a kavanah, and still say that when you're mitasek, there is a din of shchita. That's only true if you intended to do something that's close enough that it would be rendered, even though intentionally, as if you did the action properly. And so the Baal HaTosafot say that that's only true in a case where he intended to cut the simanim. He wasn't intending to shech the animal, but he intended to cut the simanim. That's called mitasek, and that mitasek results in a shchita that is a proper shchita. On the other hand, if you throw the knife at the wall and happens to cut the animal or shech the animal, that's not going to be rendered a shchita, even in chulin. And therefore he says, v'nira, hai mitasek to kodoshim. The mitasek that was being made here by kodoshim is hainu mitkavin l'chatikat simanim. He had in mind to cut the simanim, ela lo l'shem zvicha, but he didn't intend it to be a shchita. The bechulin, over there, the rabbanon say it's kasher. Even though you're metasek bechulin, it's considered to be kasher. You don't need kavanah l'shchita. You just need a kavanah l'chaticha. But it has to be a chaticha of simanim that you're doing. Therefore, that which by chulin is kasher, over here, metasek bekodeshim is pasul. Ba'od yesh metasek acher. There's another type of metasek, which is what Rabbi Lazar is being made of here, which is kagon shesavur shehu chulin. In a case where he thinks it's chulin. So over here, he's doing it l'shem shchita. He's shechting the animal, but he thinks it's kulin. So both of those cases will be classified as mitasek by kodeshim and pasul. That's where you're shechting the animal, thinking it's kulin. So you did everything right, except for the fact that you thought it was kulin. That's one mitasek that makes it pasul by kodeshim. There's another mitasek, which is also found by kulin, which is a case where you're cutting the simanim without the intention for shchita, but it turns out you did a shchita. By kulin, that would be a kosher shchita. By kodeshim, that will be classified as mitasek and will make the kodeshim be pasul. And this machloke between Rashi and the Tosafot is a machloke that we find other places in Shas, whereby Rashi thinks that mitasek is even about items that are much further removed from engaging in the object, and nevertheless it's called mitasek, whereas the Baal HaTosafot think that mitasek is only about items where they're very closely related to the action that you do in the end. And only in that case will it be considered mitasek, not something that is so far removed that it has nothing to do with the item itself. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Mem Zayin Amud Aleph.